I want you to close your eyes for a second. We're going to start somewhere completely different today.
Okay.
Picture the ocean. And I don't mean the beach, not where the kids are playing in the sand. I want you to go deep,
Way out.
way out into the open Pacific, the deep blue. Now, imagine a massive storm system raging in the North Pacific.
Right, yeah.
It's winter. The winds are just howling, churning up the surface, generating these massive amounts of energy. And that energy transfers into the water, creating these long rolling swells that start traveling south.
Traveling for thousands of miles.
Exactly, thousands of miles. And while that is happening simultaneously, I want you to visualize a second completely different storm raging way down in the South Pacific.
Totally unrelated.
Totally unrelated, different weather system, different season even, but it's doing the exact same thing. It's generating its own massive swells, sending them traveling north.
And here's the thing about this image that always gets me. Neither storm knows the other exists. They are separated by half the planet. They are completely independent forces of nature.
But the energy they created is moving. And physics dictates that eventually those vectors, they have to intersect.
They do.
Imagine they are both heading toward a single point, a specific reef in the middle of the ocean. They travel for days, maybe weeks. And then you have this moment of convergence. The swell from the north meets the swell from the south right over that reef.
And this is where the physics gets weird.
It really does, because in our normal lives, 1 + 1 = 2. If you have a dollar and I give you a dollar, you have $2. But fluid dynamics, it doesn't play by those rules.
No, it follows the law of constructive interference.
Constructive interference, that sounds highly technical. Break that down for us.
It's a principle of wave physics.
Yeah.
It's all about phase alignment. If the crest of that North Pacific swell arrives at the reef at the exact same microsecond as the crest of the South Pacific swell, they don't just stack neatly on top of each other.
A
They
fuse.
fuse. The energy enters into a state of resonance.
So if a 2 meter swell hits another 2 meter swell, you don't get a 4 meter wave.
No, you get a rogue wave. You get a 5, maybe a 6 meter monster.
Wow.
The amplitude isn't just additive. In that moment of perfect phase alignment, the energy release is exponential. 1 + 1 = 3.
1 + 1 = 3. And that is exactly what the big wave surfers are hunting. They
Exactly.
aren't just looking for a storm, they are looking for the double swell. They will wait weeks, sometimes years, for this specific mathematical alignment of independent forces.
Because when you catch that wave, you are riding energy that is greater than the sum of its parts.
Okay, so I want you to hold that image in your mind, the two distant storms, the
Yeah.
converging swells, the reef. Because today, we are not talking about oceanography.
No, we are not.
We are going to translate that picture directly into the stock market. We are talking about what might be the single most powerful structural dynamic in finance right now.
And the translation is surprisingly literal.
It is. Storm one is passive indexing, the massive decades-long migration of capital into ETFs.
Right. And Storm 2 is agentic AI, artificial intelligence acting as an autonomous agent in financial services.
And the reef. The reef is a company called MSCI.
Which means the resulting wave is something we haven't really seen before. It's a business model where two massive structural waves don't just add up, but they amplify each other through that resonance we just talked about.
So, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are digging into a really fascinating stack of analysis from Averaging Up, specifically a post titled The Double Swell Free Surfer by Jocelyn Dubey.
Which builds heavily on the book, The Infinite Investor.
Yes, it does. And frankly, this material completely reframes how we should be looking at growth stocks.
It really does. Because the mission for our deep dive today is to update a mental model.
Right.
If you've been following this space, you know about the concept of the free surfer. It's a foundational concept. But this new research suggests we aren't just looking for good businesses anymore. We are looking for an entirely new species of business that has evolved specifically because of the intersection of AI and passive investing.
I love that framing. A new species. It makes it sound biological, which I know we will get to later. But before we get to the evolution, we really have to lay the foundation.
We do.
We need to make sure you, the listener, are standing on the same ground regarding the classic free surfer concept. So let's rewind a bit. What is the basic formula here?
The original formula is simple algebra, A times B.
A times B. Unpack that for us.
A represents the toll.
Yeah.
This is a proprietary moat or a toll booth
Yeah.
that a company owns and defends. It's the infrastructure. It's the bridge you absolutely have to cross to get to the other side.
Right. And B.
B represents the wave. This is an external structural force. Think technology adoption, demographics, regulation, things like that.
Right.
That force drives volume through that toll booth.
And the critical distinction here, the thing that separates a free surfer from just a regular old good company, is the relationship between the company and the wave.
Exactly. The company does not pay for the wave. Mm-hmm. That is the fundamental definition. The world creates the wave. The company just collects the toll. If you have to spend massive marketing dollars to create your demand, you are not a free surfer. You are a hustler.
Free surfers just hold out the bucket while it rains?
That's a great way to put it.
So let's look at the classic examples to make this concrete. We are talking about Visa and MasterCard.
They are the purest specimens of the classic free surfer. Think about what Visa actually is. It's a network. That is the toll.
It's a duopoly.
A duopoly based on trust, security, and the sheer fact that there are 4 billion cards in people's wallets globally. That's A.
And B is the wave of cash disappearing.
Exactly. The secular migration from cash to digital payments. Every time you tap your phone to buy a coffee, every time you order something online, every time someone in an emerging market opens their very first bank account, that is volume flowing through the toll booth.
But wait, I want to push on this just a little bit. Because Visa spends money on ads. I see their commercials during the Olympics. So they are paying for the wave, aren't they?
Well, that is brand maintenance. But think about the actual infrastructure of the transaction itself. Did Visa build the coffee shop you're standing in?
No.
Did they build the iPhone you are tapping?
Definitely not Apple did that.
Right. Did they build the 5G network that carries the signal? Did they build the Amazon warehouse where your package is coming from?
No, Verizon and Amazon did that.
Exactly. Visa doesn't even lend you the money. The bank does that. Visa just stands at the gate. They provide the digital rails. And for that, they get a cut of every single transaction.
It's incredible when you frame it like that.
The entire global economy is spending trillions of dollars building the infrastructure of digital commerce, and Visa just sits there and taxes it. It is, in the truest sense, free growth. Mm. Pure, simple, elegant, one toll, one wave.
It's a beautiful business model. Honestly, if you could only own one type of business for 100 years, that feels like the one. It's almost unfair.
It is absolutely unfair. That is why their margins are 60%.
But here is where it gets really interesting. The source material for today suggests that this A times B formula, it was too simple.
It was just the starting point.
Right. It was like Newtonian physics before we discovered quantum mechanics.
That is the big discovery. The introduction of artificial intelligence into the financial ecosystem has revealed that there isn't just one type of free surfer. There are actually 3 distinct species.
Three species.
And understanding the difference between them, understanding this taxonomy, is the key to figuring out where the real power lies in the market right now.
So let's put on our biologist hats. We have the classic Visa. But now we have 2 new categories. Let's start with the second one. The source calls it the resilient free surfer. And the poster child here is Moody's.
Moody's Corporation, the credit rating agency. Now, structurally, Moody's looks a lot like Visa at first glance. It has a massive moat.
Right. If you want to issue debt as a corporation or a country, you basically have to get a rating from Moody's or S&P.
You have no choice.
It's written into the regulatory code of most pension funds. They legally can't buy unrated paper. That is the toll.
Correct. But look at the ways. The architecture here is A times B1 plus B2.
Okay, let's unpack that math. What is B1?
B1 is the first wave. Global debt growth. As the global economy expands, as countries develop, they issue more debt. Sovereign debt, corporate bonds, municipal bonds.
Right.
That volume has been growing for decades. It's a very reliable, steady wave.
And B2?
B2 is artificial intelligence.
Okay, so how exactly does AI interact with a credit rating agency?
Well, think about what AI agents in finance actually do. They consume data voraciously. If you have an AI analyst trying to assess credit risk for a massive portfolio, it needs to read the ratings.
It's pulling that data constantly.
Constantly. It pulls data from Moody's all day to update its models. So AI heavily increases the volume of queries. It uses the toll booth more often.
So on paper, this sounds amazing. Debt is growing. AI is growing. Moody's gets paid twice.
It is great. But the source material makes a really specific, critical distinction here. It points out that these waves are additive, not multiplicative.
Why does that matter? Isn't growth just growth?
It matters entirely because of causality. This is where we have to be very precise. Ask yourself this. Does the existence of an AI agent create more global debt?
I mean, the AI might analyze the debt, but does it make the U.S. Treasury print more bonds? No.
Exactly. The AI consumes the data, the ratings, much faster. but it doesn't drive the issuance of the underlying product, which is the debt itself.
That makes sense.
Debt issuance is driven by interest rates, government policy, fiscal deficits, macroeconomic growth. It is completely independent of AI.
So there are basically two separate storms that just happen to be hitting the same toll booth.
Right. They're additive. If AI vanished tomorrow, global debt would still grow. If debt issuance slowed down, AI would still be there eating the historical data. This makes Moody's resilient.
It has two engines.
Exactly. If one fails, the other keeps running. That is fantastic. It's a fortress. But the waves do not amplify each other. There is no constructive interference.
Which brings us to the main event, the third species, the double swell. This is where the math changes from addition to multiplication. And the company we are looking at is MSCI.
MSCI, Morgan Stanley Capital International. Though, to be clear, they have been independent for years.
So let's set the scene for MSCI. What is the toll?
The toll is the index licensing fee. MSCI creates the indices that the world uses to measure the market. Think of the MSCI World Index or the MSCI Emerging Markets Index.
Right.
There are about $18 trillion in assets benchmarked to these indices. And specifically, there are trillions of dollars in ETFs that track them directly.
So every time I buy an ETF, say an iShares ETF that tracks an MSCI index, they get a tiny cut.
A basis point or so on every single dollar. That is the toll.
Okay, now let's look at the waves. Wave one is something we've talked about before, the shift from active to passive investing.
Correct. This is B1. For 20 years, humans have been realizing that active stock pickers generally underperform the market after fees.
It is really hard to beat the market.
Almost impossible over a long enough timeline. So money has been migrating from active mutual funds into passive ETFs. That wave is huge, and it's been running for a long time.
And wave two is agentic AI.
Mm.
Now walk me through this. How is this different from Moody's? You said Moody's was additive. Why is this a double swell? Why is this multiplicative?
This is the real so what moment. This is where we have to understand the mind of the machine. We need to do some first principles thinking about how an AI actually invests.
Okay, let's get into the brain of the AI.
Imagine you are an AI agent. Your goal is to construct a portfolio for a client. You have access to every stock in the world. You can read every annual report in 3 seconds.
So I assume the AI is the ultimate stock picker, right? I mean, it should be finding the next Apple before anyone else. It should be doing deep fundamental analysis.
That is the intuitive trap. We project our own human desire for alpha, for beating the market, onto the machine. Right.
But an AI operating in finance is a utility maximizer. It is optimizing for efficiency, cost, and error minimization.
It is extremely risk averse.
Extremely. Picking individual stocks introduces idiosyncratic risk. The risk that the CEO does something stupid or a factory burns down or there is a sudden fraud scandal.
AI hates unquantifiable variables.
It hates stories. It likes data.
And the index is pure data.
Exactly. The index is a cleaned, sanitized data set. It represents the aggregate wisdom of the market. It's liquid. It's transparent. And crucially, it has an API.
Right.
For an AI, the MSCI World Index isn't a list of companies. It's a standardized, high reliability software protocol.
That is a really fascinating pivot. Mm. You're saying the AI views the index as the operating system and individual stocks are just buggy apps.
Precisely.
Yeah.
So the smarter the AI gets, the more it prefers the stability of the OS over the volatility of the apps. The default building block for algorithmic portfolio construction is the index, the ETF.
Well, let's trace the loop here. Okay. Step one, AI agents enter the chat. They make investing automated and frictionless. Step two, because they prioritize efficiency and variance reduction, they allocate capital to passive products. They buy the index.
So the AI naturally pushes capital into MSCI-linked ETFs?
Yes. But here's the feedback loop. Step three, more index dollars generate more market data. As those ETFs grow, they become even more liquid, even more central to the financial plumbing.
The signal of the index gets stronger.
And step four, that improved data feeds the AI. The AI needs that structured index data to function. It's the oxygen for the AI's engine. As the data gets better, the AI gets smarter and more capable at asset allocation.
Which attracts more users to use the AI.
Who then put more money into the system.
Which the AI then allocates back to the indices.
The loop closes. The output becomes the input. Unlike Moody's, where AI just reads the report, here AI actually accelerates the creation of the asset, the passive flows, that pays the toll.
That is wild. It is totally circular.
It's not just circular, it's reinforcing. It's what systems thinkers call an R loop or a reinforcing loop.
Let's dig into that systems thinking aspect for a minute. The source material brings up Jay Forrester from MIT. I haven't heard that name in a while.
Forrester was a giant. He founded the field of system dynamics back in the 1950s. He taught us that the world isn't just made of linear lists of cause and effect. It's made of loops, stocks and flows.
Right.
Most businesses are linear. Visa's linear. Cash converts to digital. That is a one-way street. Once the cash is gone, the wave is over.
But MSCI is a circle or a spiral.
It's the spiral that expands. And this brings us back to the physics analogy we started with, the concept of coupling. Imagine two pendulums. Physicists call them oscillators. Usually they swing independently. One swings at its own rhythm, the other at its own.
Like the two storms in the ocean.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you connect those pendulums with a string, if you couple them, they can enter resonance. They start to push each other. Every time one swings, it adds energy to the other through that string.
Yeah.
The amplitude, the height of the swing, becomes greater than what either could achieve alone.
So in this analogy, passive investing is one pendulum. AI is the other pendulum. And they are now connected by a string.
And that string is the MSCI index. The index is the medium through which they communicate and amplify each other.
That is such a powerful image. It creates this double swell where the growth isn't just steady, it is explosive because the forces are actively feeding each other.
It really explains why big wave riders wait for this. In the market, you wait for a business where external forces aren't just lucky tailwinds, but mutually reinforcing engines.
Now, before we get too carried away with MSCI, there is another player in this story. Because while MSCI is the pure specimen of this double swell, there is another company that is a bit of a monster, a chimera, S&P Global.
SPGI.
A giant.
S&P Global is fascinating because it is a hybrid. It houses two totally different engines under one roof.
It's like it swallowed two different animals.
In a way, yes. Engine one is their ratings business. Remember, they share that duopoly with Moody's. So that part of the business operates exactly like a resilient free surfer. It is additive. Debt plus AI. It's the steady, reliable cash cow.
Okay, so that is the ballast.
But then they have engine two, S&P Dow Jones Indices. They own the S&P 500.
The big one.
Yeah, the biggest one. And that engine operates exactly like MSCI. It's a coupled free surfer. Passive plus AI, reinforcing each other.
So S&P Global gives you both. You get the resilience of the ratings business and the explosive coupling of the index business.
It poses a really interesting dilemma for an investor. The investor's dilemma, as the source calls it. Do you want to own the pure double swell, which is MSCI? That gives you higher octane. You are 100% exposed to that reinforcing loop.
But if that loop breaks, or if passive flows somehow stall...
Exactly. You feel it much more. Whereas S&P Global is the all-weather vehicle. It's diversified. If the passive revolution hits a speed bump, the debt issuance side, the rating side, might just keep going strong.
It's the difference between a Formula One car and a tank. Both are impressive, but they serve completely different purposes.
And they are priced differently by the market, usually. But structurally, S&P Global is unique because it captures every single species of free surfer in one corporate boundary.
I want to shift gears a bit. We've used a lot of physics metaphors, storms, pendulums, resonance. But the source material also uses a biological metaphor that I found really helpful to visualize this relationship between AI and the index, because loops can feel a bit abstract.
The marine biology metaphor.
Yes. The clownfish and the anemone.
It's a classic example of symbiosis, and it fits perfectly because it explains the exchange of value. Think about the clownfish. It lives among the tentacles of the sea anemone. The anemone is dangerous. It stings other fish. But the clownfish is immune. It gets protection.
And what does the anemone get? I honestly always thought the fish was just a squatter.
No, it's a trade. The clownfish is hyperactive. It swims around, it wiggles its tail constantly, it darts in and out. This movement brings circulation, water flow, oxygen, nutrients. It brings all of that deep into the anemone's tentacles.
So let's map this to our topic.
The clownfish is AI. It brings the flow. It brings the volume, the users, the high-frequency rebalancing.
And the anemone?
The anemone is the index ecosystem. It provides the habitat. It provides the structured data, the benchmarks, the substrate that the AI needs to survive and function safely.
And MSCI?
MSCI is the reef. It's the underlying structure that supports the whole symbiosis.
That really clicks for me, because neither the clownfish nor the anemone created the other. AI wasn't invented for indexing. And indexing wasn't invented for AI.
No, they evolved entirely independently, just like the storms in the ocean. But now that they have found each other, they thrive better together. AI needs the oxygen of index data, and the index needs the circulation of capital, the liquidity that AI brings.
Circulation is liquidity. That is the key phrase right there. The AI keeps the index liquid.
Exactly. Without the fish, the anemone stagnates. Without the anemone, the fish gets eaten by volatility.
It's a beautiful theory, but I have to play devil's advocate here. It sounds almost too perfect. Is this just a nice narrative we've spun, or is there actual proof that the market sees it this way? Because the source material points to a very specific date where this theory actually played out in the real world, Tuesday, February 24th, 2026.
This is the validation event. And to understand why it matters so much, you have to remember the context of January 2026. Do you remember the panic?
Oh, vividly. The data is dead narrative.
Right. In January, the market had a massive sell-off in data providers. The first order thinking was pure fear. Investors looked at LLMs like GPT-5 and Claude and thought, oh no, AI is going to scrape all this data. AI is going to know everything. Who needs to pay MSCI or Moody's or FactSet if the AI just knows the answer?
The narrative was that AI would completely replace the data provider. It would just bypass the toll booth entirely.
Exactly. Stock prices tanked.
Yeah, that.
Trillions in market cap were wiped out across the software and data sector. Everyone thought these companies were the next Encyclopedia Britannica.
But then came February 24th. Take us back to that day. What changed?
The catalyst was an announcement from Anthropic, the creators of the AI model, Claude. They announced something called MCP connectors. Basically, they integrated their AI directly with MSCI and FactSet and announced plugins for S&P Global.
This was Claude Cowork.
Right. It meant that suddenly, this incredibly powerful AI agent could talk directly to the financial data providers via API. It wasn't scraping them, it was hiring them.
And the market reaction was instantaneous.
It was a violent correction to the upside because the market suddenly had a second-order realization.
Which was?
They realized that AI doesn't replace data, it consumes it. And it consumes it at a scale that humans simply cannot match.
The source gives some numbers on this that I found staggering.
Think about a human analyst. A hardworking junior analyst on Wall Street might make, what, 50 data queries a day? Looking up PE ratios, checking index weightings.
50 sounds about right. Maybe 100 on a crazy day before their eyes completely glaze over.
An agentic AI running automated portfolio, rebalancing for thousands of clients. It doesn't get tired. It doesn't sleep. It makes 500 queries, maybe 5,000. It checks the index weighting every hour.
And the toll.
The toll scales with volume. So the market realized, wait a minute, we aren't losing customers. We are gaining a customer, the AI, that is 10 times hungrier than the human customer ever was.
And looking at the stock prices on that day, February 24th, MSCI was up 2%, S&P Global up 3%, FactSet up 6%.
Yeah.
In a single day.
It was the moment the coupling became totally visible. The market acknowledged that these two forces were reinforcing each other. The stocks moved in lockstep with the AI advancement. It proved the thesis. It proved that the AI is the clownfish, not the predator.
That is such a clear example of how the market learns. It panics first, thinks later, but when it thinks, it usually gets to the right answer eventually.
It's the difference between viewing AI as a competitor versus viewing AI as a super user.
Okay, so we have this incredible double swell. We have the feedback loop, we have the symbiosis. It sounds perfect. But I am looking at the clock and I'm looking at history, and I know that nothing goes up in a straight line forever. Do these stocks just go up to infinity?
This is where we have to be the adults in the room. We have to look at the
The
limits.
sigmoid curve.
Right. In nature and in business, almost nothing is truly exponential forever. Exponential curves usually turn out to be sigmoid curves, S curves. They start slow, they accelerate rapidly, that is the steep part of the S, and then they eventually plateau.
Why? What stops the acceleration?
The chemists call it substrate exhaustion. Imagine a fire. It burns hotter and hotter as long as there is wood, but eventually you run out of wood. The substrate is the fuel.
So what is the substrate for the double swell free surfer? What is the wood for this specific fire?
The substrate is active capital. Remember, the whole engine is built on the migration from active to passive. Right now, passive is roughly 50% of the U.S. market. That means the other 50% is the fuel waiting to be burned.
That is a lot of fuel left.
It is. That is why we say the runway is long. We are in the acceleration phase right now. But it's not infinite. You can't have 110% of the market be passive.
And there's another mechanism mentioned in the analysis, a balancing loop, the Grossman-Stiglitz paradox. This is one of my favorite economic concepts because it is so incredibly counterintuitive.
It is brilliant. The basic idea is this: if everyone goes passive, if nobody is doing the fundamental research to figure out what a stock is actually worth, then the market becomes inefficient. Prices get out of whack.
Because nobody is minding the store. Nobody is checking if Apple is actually worth $3 trillion or $4 trillion.
Exactly. And if prices get out of whack, what happens? Suddenly, it becomes really profitable to be a stock picker again. Alpha, the return you get for being smart goes up.
So if passive gets too big, active investing becomes highly lucrative again.
And money will naturally flow back to active management to capture those profits. That is the self-correcting mechanism. It's the Chatelier's principle from chemistry applied directly to finance. When a system at equilibrium is disturbed, it shifts to reduce the disturbance. The market will fight back against 100% passive.
So we won't ever get to a world where MSCI owns literally every dollar.
Highly unlikely. The system will find a balance. But that balance point might be much higher than where we are right now. Maybe it's 70% passive, maybe 80%. We don't know the exact number. But we know the loop has a brake pedal eventually.
And there is one final fear to address, the Darwinian ocean. I hear this from listeners sometimes. They ask, if everyone buys the S&P 500, doesn't the market break? Does capital allocation just stop working? Do zombie companies survive forever because the index buys them blindly?
It is a valid fear, but the source argues against it pretty strongly. The S&P 500 isn't a charity. It is explicitly described as a Darwinian machine.
Explain that.
Think about the companies in the S&P 500. It is not a static list. It changes. Kodak used to be there. It's gone. General Electric used to be the absolute king. It fell. Tesla wasn't there. Now it is.
The index committee is the predator. It culls the weak.
Exactly. The ocean, the index, constantly removes the weak companies and adds the strong ones based on strict market cap and profitability rules. Mm-hmm. This happens regardless of who owns the shares. Whether the money is active or passive, the selection mechanism of the index itself remains totally ruthless.
So the ocean might get rougher.
Yes, volatility might go up, the ride might be bumpier, but the ocean won't evaporate. It won't stop working. It's a survival engine. The index always adapts.
So we have covered a lot of ground today. We have gone from storms in the Pacific to chemical reactions to marine biology. Let's bring it all back home. Let's do a quick recap of this new taxonomy for you, the listener. I want you to be able to look at a stock and know exactly what you were seeing.
Sure, let's look at the table.
Species one, the classic.
Visa and MasterCard. One toll, one wave. Simple, elegant. The wave is cash to digital.
Species two, the resilient.
Moody's. One toll, two independent waves. Additive. Two engines are better than one, but they don't talk to each other. Debt and AI run on parallel tracks.
Species three, the coupled, the double swell.
MSCI.
Okay.
One toll, two reinforcing waves. Passive and AI amplify each other via the index. 1 + 1 = 3. This is the constructive interference we talked about.
And the hybrid.
S&P Global. The best of both worlds. A resilient engine, the ratings, and a coupled engine. The indices under one corporate roof.
It is amazing how much clarity this framework provides. It stops you from just saying, oh, that is a growth stock. And it forces you to ask, what kind of growth is this? Is it additive? Is it coupled?
That is the power of a mental model. It gives you a lens to see the world more clearly. You stop looking at the price and start looking at the mechanics.
So what does this all mean for you listening to this?
I think the biggest takeaway is about recognizing exactly where we are in history. We are in the acceleration phase of a very rare structural alignment. The double swell isn't just a theory anymore. It is happening. The data from February 2026 absolutely proved it.
But remember the S-curve.
Right. Don't be blind to the limits. The runway is long, probably a decade, but it is not infinite. Watch for the substrate exhaustion. Watch for the return of active alpha.
Which leads us to our final thought. The source material ends with a quote that I think is just perfect. It brings us right back to the ocean where we started.
The infinite investor isn't someone who thinks trees grow to the sky. They are the surfer who knows exactly which part of the waves carries the most energy and stands up at that exact moment.
That is the goal. Find the energy. Check the alignment. Stand up. Ride it while it surges.
And know when to get off before it crashes on the shore.
Exactly. Listen, this has been a truly fascinating deep dive. If you want to dig into the charts and the specific numbers, I highly recommend checking out the original post, The Double Swell Free Surfer at Averaging Up. The diagrams of the loops, specifically the systems dynamics charts, are well worth a look.
Absolutely. Seeing the systems diagram really helps lock it all in.
Thanks for riding the wave with us today. Keep learning, keep curious, and we will see you on the next deep dive.
Later.